For 4 seasons, she starred in the hit comedy Less Than Perfect, but in real life, she's not far from it. You've seen her in everything from Dawson's Creek to The Big Bang Theory. Now she's back on our TVs on CBS and Chuck Lorre's new hit comedy smash, Be Positive. She's Sarah Rue. I'm Jerry Strauss, and this is The Laugh Track.
Do you need your weekly comedy fix? Relax while we visit the sitcoms you love, the jokes you remember, the characters you will never forget, and the stars that bring them to you. Sit back. It's The Laugh Track with Jerry Strauss.
You're from New York, right?
I am. Born and raised in Manhattan, and then I've lived in LA now for long enough that I probably can't still claim to be like a New Yorker, but I am, and I'll never let it go.
Yeah, I'm sure you've got your street cred card somewhere.
Oh, I mean, when you're taking the subway by yourself at 7, like, you're a New Yorker, like, forever. Like, that's it, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's interesting because I didn't know until getting ready for this interview that you were from New York. So you have a lot of Broadway in your family, your parents involved in Broadway. Was that kind of your... your upbringing, like your original direction growing up as far as where you wanted to go?
Yeah, I mean, it's always where I wanted to go. I think they were horrified that I thought it was great and also wanted to do it. But yeah, I from a very early age, like I was going to the theater with my dad. My dad was a Broadway stage manager. And so he would like oftentimes pick me up from school and take me to whatever theater he was working out of and whatever show he was doing on Broadway. And I would sit in the house and I would watch rehearsals and get dinner. And then, once the shows were up, I would also hang out with him at the theater and then watch usually the first act. And then my mom would get done with whatever show she was doing and then come pick me up and take me home. So I saw the first act of like a lot of shows. Which is great. I don't know how any musicals end. It's fine.
It's like the last chapter is ripped out of every book.
Of every book I've ever read, completely.
Do you think that experience kind of formed the way you thought about the entertainment business, about acting, about, you know, the importance or at least the lure of performing in front of a live audience? Was that kind of the thing for you because you'd seen it so much?
That's interesting. Maybe. I mean, it always just seemed like magic to me, but it wasn't as much, I don't think, about the audience as it was just seeing the life that the actors had, you know, coming in and the community that there was at the theater and them getting to transform into the, you know, whatever character they were playing. And it was always so magical to me that I was like, I just always wanted to be part of that magic, you know? And it was less about the audience and their reaction and more about just like that life just seemed like the greatest thing that I could possibly imagine. And also I just wasn't exposed to anything else. Like maybe if like my dad had been a dentist, I would have been like, oh my God, it is so amazing. The teeth he pulled. But that was just our whole life was, you know, like my dad would either be backstage or he'd be taking a tour out and I'd go visit him wherever he was, or my mom would be doing a show and I'd go visit her and watch her. And it just, my mom was an actress. And so it was always like, this is what you do, you know? But what was so funny was then they were so horrified when I was like, I want to do this. And they were like, no. And it's so crazy. It's like, well, then you should have shown me something else. If you didn't want me to do this, you should have exposed me to like anything else that I could have done and given me a choice. But now I want to be an actor. And so there we are.
There you go. So there was never any point, you know, whether due to lack of exposure, passion, combination of all the above, there was never any point in your young life or beyond where you thought, maybe I need a break from this. I need to take my life in a different direction.
I mean, I think, so I started acting at a very young age, and the way it went was I went to an opening night party for an off-Broadway show or showcase that my mom was doing. And when I kind of walked ahead with some of the actors in the cast, and I was like 7 or 8, And there was an agent there, and I had cut my own bangs and I had chipped my front tooth and I was kind of a funny looking kid. And the agent was like, Hey, who is this kid? Do you want to be on TV? And I was like, yeah, I do. And then by the time my parents got to the party, I had an agent. And then, you know, my parents sort of were like, you can go on one audition. You can see what this is about. And I think, you know, they genuinely thought I'll go on one audition. And I was the kind of kid that I didn't like not being the best at things. Like I quit a lot of things, which I look back on. I'm like, they shouldn't have let me quit piano, but I quit because I was not the best. And I didn't like being bad at something. It bummed me out as a child. Mm-hmm. It still bums me out. It's still an issue. I'm talking to my therapist about it. Don't worry. I'll be fine. And so I think they thought that she'll go on one audition, she won't get it, and she'll be mad, and she won't ever want to do this again, and then maybe we have a chance of like having a child who's a doctor or whatever. But unfortunately for them, I went on one audition, and I kept getting called back and called back, and eventually I got the part, and it was this movie on location that shot for like months on location with this incredible cast. It was called Rocket Gibraltar. Burt Lancaster played my grandfather, Bull Pullman, John Glover, Franny Conroy, like just an amazing group of actors. And I got the job and my parents were like, oh crap. Now we have to like deal with this. And then, you know, as a child, I loved being on set. You know, I was kind of as a kid, like I was not treated well at school. I was bullied and I had a really hard time at school. And then I went to this environment where there were these grownups who were so nice to me. And everybody was an artist and like, so sort of just like, oh, cool. She's a weird kid. We like weird, like a set where weird was like embraced and, you know, applauded was like, oh, I found my people. And then I never wanted to leave. But then, so I worked and I did TV shows and flew back and forth to LA and I was really lucky and I got a lot of jobs. And then it kind of slowed down for me. And I was like, you know, maybe like when I was like 17, 18, and I was like, well, maybe I'll go to college and like figure out something else to do. Mm-hmm. And I like took one class at a community college and then like right when the finals were going to be, I got a TV show and I was like, peace out, college. like, and so that was like, for one second, I was like, maybe I'll be something else. And then once the opportunity presented itself to continue acting, I was like, well, that's what I want to be. I often think like, what would I be if I wasn't an actor? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I do not know. Like I can't think of anything. I mean, I really like writing. I can't think of anything outside of sort of this industry that I would want to do.
It's kind of hard to think about anything in life that scratches the itches, so to speak, that you get from either performing on a stage in front of people, just in general. I mean, there's nothing like it. It's not like, I'm a dentist, but maybe I want to, you know, be a veterinarian or something and help animals instead of people. Like it feels like once you're in that lane, there's no getting off.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little like a drug, I guess, you know, because you really do get these incredibly high highs where you're like, you know, that first laugh that you get from an audience or, you know, you do a scene and you just feel so connected to your scene partner. And like, then the scene's over and you look at the other actor and you're like, oh, we made art. Like that was, you know, it's just this, like, it feels so good and you want more of it all the time. So yeah, like it's really hard to imagine another career where you get those same bursts of, I don't know what it is, adrenaline or whatever that feeling is. It's just like, how do you replace that?
Yeah. Do you feel like comedy has become sort of your preferred niche in the acting world? Because the reason why I was so excited to have you on this show is because I know you've been on so many different sitcoms and, you know, worked on so many different shows that are comedic, like shows that I remember like you being great on so many different things and working with so many cool people. And then, you know, looking at your career, realizing you've done just so much more. You've done so much of all different kinds of work. Mm-hmm. But is comedy, like, does that hold a special place in your heart to kind of come back as you are now on Be Positive, to come back to that sitcom world?
I mean, I do love it. I have to say, I really do. And, you know, I think it's funny. It's like, I just wanted to be an actor. And it's not like when you're starting out, or when you're, at least I never felt like I was like, I'm choosing this thing for myself. Like, it was just, you know, I think comedic timing, you're either born with it or you're not. And I was lucky enough to have pretty good timing. And, there aren't that, you know, many, it's sort of like a specialized skill in a weird way, especially multicam, where you're able to like be grand. Like, I feel so obnoxious being like, I'm great at multicam, but I don't mean to sound like obnoxious about it. I just mean that it's either you love it and it makes sense in your body and as, you know, the kind of artist that you are, or it doesn't make sense to you and you go off and you're like this incredible dramatic actor, but multicam just isn't in your bones. And I think it was always in my bones as an artist. And so, yeah, I do love it. I do like getting that laugh from the audience, but it's been a really interesting experience on Be Positive with, it's a new show on CBS that I'm on. And we were able to shoot our pilot before COVID. It was right. We literally shot the night the NBA shut down and the whole world was kind of shutting down. We shot the pilot. And so you'd shoot a scene and come off and check your phone and be like, oh, maybe we should all go. Like, do we need to leave this? Like, should we go home? But we were lucky enough to be able to finish the show. And then the next day the world kind of, or at least this country kind of stopped. And now we were able to go back and start production up again, but it's a very different set because we can't have a live audience. And not only that, you know, when you're shooting a multicam, you usually have a day on stage where all the writers and producers come down and you pre-shoot before the live show the next day. But we don't get that because they can't physically come to stage anymore. So they're all the writers are watching over a computer Zoom feed, but we don't hear them laugh because it would be weird. And so they're muted and you don't really get that energy that you get when they all come down and they're laughing. Or sometimes you spend the week thinking like, oh, I don't know if this joke is working. And then you do it and you're like, ah, oh, it landed. People laughed. It felt good. But we never get that sort of extra boost. And so it's like kind of like shooting a single cam in a multicam format, just without the audience. So it's a really interesting experience for me because I've done single cams, but those are literally with a single camera, like a film. And this is just a multicam without the audience. So it's been really unique and really interesting. And it really reminds me of all the things that I do love about having an audience, but there's also kind of a joy to this way of shooting too, because you get to do a take more than two times. Like when you do a live show, you got to kind of keep going. And you really get to make specific choices and try things different ways and get to play more like you would with a film. So I am really enjoying that side of things with the sort of like comedy heightened element of the multicam format. It's really interesting. It's like a whole new thing. I'm totally digging it.
You know, I love how kind of interconnected and how small this world can be. And I think we deal with it a lot on this show. When you're talking to someone like yourself, who's done so much and worked with so many people, you know, the episode right before this one, we spoke to Michael Fishman, who was DJ Connor, is DJ Connor on the Connors, right, and talked about the exact same thing because they headed in. I think they at least claimed to be the first show that came back to film, you know, kind of crawling out of the hole that is COVID. Yeah. And kind of facing the exact same atmosphere and finding ways to try to, you know, whether it be just random crew members and spreading them out and trying to get some sort of laughter, some sort of feedback, just trying to replicate the vibe that they're used to. And I wanted to ask you about that because that was really your first sitcom experience, right? You were on Roseanne back when, according to my notes, when you were 9 years old. Is that the case?
Close. So I was, the first movie I did, I was 9. And then I did an entire series called Grand that was on when I was, I was 10, 11, 12 or 11, 12, 13. I can't remember exact, but in there. And that was a Carsey Warner show, who also did Roseanne at the time. And so when Grand was over, I went back to New York and then I ended up coming out and doing an episode of Roseanne.
Okay.
After I did a series. Yeah. It was early on for sure.
Yeah. But it's interesting because throughout your career, you've done so much of both. You've done so much kind of popping in and just doing these very memorable guest appearances or, you know, single or maybe just a few different appearances. And then you've mixed it in with a lot of longer term stuff as well. Do you have like equally fond memories of both? Do you prefer one over the other? Because it seems like a lot of fun at times to just kind of pop in and do something really, really wacky and then move on to the next thing, variety.
Yeah. I mean, there's like, yes, I really like doing that because there's a freedom in it. Like when you're like, I'm here for 1 week, I can do whatever I want. It doesn't matter if they don't like it, I'm out anyway. Like you don't have the pressure of like, this is the character I've been doing for 3 years and I know what she would say and what she would do here. And you feel really, you're just like, no, I'm here for the funny. Like I'm not as connected. So I can sort of push the comedy or I can just come in and play and sort of not have certain pressures. But then on the other side of it, like the anxiety, I get a lot of sort of, I'm like not the most socially comfortable person. So when you put me onto a set with all new people, I get very nervous. Like it's the first day of school. So when I'm a regular on a show, that goes away eventually and you get comfortable with people. And it's sort of like, you know, it's the difference between being a guest in someone's home or being in your own home. So there's positives and negatives to both. Right. But, you know, I think because I just am like, socially, I get nervous around people. I think I prefer just to like being a series regular. It feels very stable. Like you know where you're going and it's a safe environment and everybody knows you and there's something really nice in that routine. Mm-hmm. But then I really have loved certain experiences. Like I did a long in and out run on a show called Rules of Engagement where I played Patrick Warburton's surrogate. And his friend turned surrogate for his unborn child. And I was literally pregnant for 4 years on that show. And it was so like it was so great. Cause I know Patrick pretty well in real life. So I felt very comfortable with him. And it was just a great group of people, a great group of writers. It was so fun to pop in. That was like one of those situations where I felt extremely comfortable and safe. And also got to be like, listen, I'm just the guest star. I can just come in and be the funny and I don't have to worry about all the things that you have to worry about when you're here all the time. So that was like so much fun. And I did that on and off for like, it was four seasons total of on and off. And it was great. I loved it.
You did 4 seasons of a show that a lot of people remember you for called Less Than Perfect.
Yeah.
And this was a show that, I mean, you were, you know, it was largely based around you. What was it like to kind of get into that as the seasons went on? Because now you've kind of got a different kind of pressure on you, certainly different than just popping in and out of a series. Like, did you feel that? Was that like a totally different kind of gig to have to kind of shoulder that?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And it was funny because like I hadn't been the lead of a show before. I had been a series regular a bunch of times, but always in a supporting position. And so, you know, I remember when I got that pilot, it was huge for me because it was like the first time I was the lead of the show. And I was just purely so excited. It was one of the few times in my life I didn't feel anxiety or pressure. It was very weird. I was just like thrilled, truly, which is very unlike me because I always feel anxiety and pressure. But I was just like so happy. I think I was just so happy. I was like on cloud 9 and I didn't think about all the other stuff. And then I remember, you know, all week it had been going really well. And then on tape night of the pilot, I remember being like, oh my God, if this doesn't work, it's my fault. Just being like, oh. And then just like crazy nerves, just flop sweat, just like panic. And then the show started and the pilot went really, it was amazing. It was like so fun and all the cast really clicked and we did four seasons. And, you know, yeah, you're aware like that it depends a lot more upon you when you're, you know, as they say, like number one on the call sheet or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so that was a pressure, but I also just, I really enjoyed that character so much and I really enjoyed that show. And again, the writers were so smart and so great. And I'm, you know, still friends with members of that cast. And it was a really, really incredible experience. So yes, I felt the pressure and it was a little nerve wracking. But then I think actually once we got past the first season and we got picked up for season two, I was like, whew, okay. Okay, I did it. Mm. It's okay. Now it's, and the show became more of an ensemble as all shows sort of, you know, multicams do. And we were able to just like have a lot of fun. And so then I think the pressure was off a little bit, but also I really, like I had never done press for a show at that time. Like I'd always been a supporting character and I'd been a kid up until like, I was, you know, 23 or 24 when I got Less Than Perfect. And I had always been the kid in the cast or one of the teens on the teen show. And so there really wasn't press to be done. And I remember that was the thing about Less Than Perfect that was the most, that I needed to make the most adjustment for, because it was like, oh, I have to be on talk shows and I have to, like, this was a whole different skill set that I kind of had to learn. But again, like once I started doing a few of them, I was like, oh, this is fun. I really like these. So it was great.
Yeah. You know, I know, Eric Roberts was on that show. I know that you mentioned him before. Pat Warburton was on the show.
Patty came on, yeah.
Was it a different experience for you? As you said, you know, instead of being around peers that were a bunch of teens or a bunch of kids, now it's like veteran people. It's adults, it's grown-ups, and they've been around the block a while. Was that kind of a quick education for you on a different level?
Yeah, very much so. I was like, oh, I got to step up my game. Like I just wanted, and I wanted very much to be on the same level as everybody who had, you know, worked a lot for a long time. Like I just wanted to be there and respected. And I, you know, I'm just like, I think it just, like I said, because I have like anxiety, I am never late ever. I'm always like 20 minutes early. I never don't know my lines. Like I would never want to be the one that was messing up because it would just cause me so much anxiety that it would not be worth it. So I was really, I think that was a good sort of personality trait to have when you're going into a situation like that, where you're working with a bunch of veterans, because, you know, as like the younger one or the new kid or whatever it was, however they saw me, I was like, I'm not going to be the one to mess up. I'm not going to be the one to be late. I'm not going to mess around. I knew what a big deal it was, you know? And I think they respected that. I don't know. You have to ask them. Ask Patrick.
Okay. We'll get him on the line after this.
Yeah, call him.
Okay, guys, quick time out here from this fantastic conversation. I'm having a lot of fun, but let's talk about something that is super important. A great organization, No Kid Hungry, is a campaign that is helping kids remain fed each and every day, even when school is not in session. So take a listen to this message and get to know No Kid Hungry.
Because of the coronavirus, schools have closed nationwide, and kids in need are missing nearly 34 million school meals every day. For many, it's the only healthy food they might get in a given day. No Kid Hungry has a plan to feed these kids, but they need your help. Donate now at nokidhungry.org to help feed America's children during this crisis and in the months to come. That's nokidhungry.org. Thanks.
I have to believe that everything that you did throughout your career and all the auditions you probably went on, everyone seems to have stories of shows that they tried out for that nobody knows they tried out for, and maybe they almost got the role. And if, you know, it was a flip of the coin in a different direction, those shows that we know would have taken a totally different direction. Is there any shows that you were kind of in the running for a part that became well known and somebody else just happened to land in that parking spot?
Oh my gosh. I mean, there are so many. I don't even like, I don't know. Am I not supposed to tell you? I guess it's fine. Well, like before Kaylee Cuoco was even brought in for Big, when they shot the pilot of Big Bang Theory, they ended up recasting a young woman who had played that part. And then they were trying to find someone to replace that person from the pilot. And I ended up I did a test for it to play the role that Kaylee eventually got. We didn't test against each other, but I tested for that and like really wanted that job because it was so, oh my God, that script was so funny. I'm trying to think if there's like another, that was definitely obviously Big Bang because it's a show that ran for such a long time. That's one of those things when people say, yeah, I was almost on Friends, but you know, like it would have been a completely different, you know, type of character if I had done it, like it just would have been like a totally different show and maybe not, you know, maybe not worked, like who knows, you know,
you never know. I mean, definitely. Clearly, you have a history with Chuck Lorre's shows because you came back for Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
You were on Two and a Half Men. Was that, I mean, was that sort of a relationship that developed early on where, you know, he and those people just kept wanting you to be a part of all of his stuff?
He's been so kind and generous to me. Another failed audition story. So the year that I ended up getting Less Than Perfect, before I got that pilot, I don't know if, I'm sure maybe some of your listeners know, but just really briefly, like when you're auditioning for things, especially pilots during pilot season, you go in a few times and then you do what's called a network test. And they make you like, it feels very high pressure because you sign a contract before you actually do your final audition. And they do it like a very, in a theatrical way where you're auditioning in front of like, you know, 10, 20, 30 network and studio executives and the writers. And it's like, it's high pressure and it's live. You get one shot. It's not on tape. You know, it's like, it's intense. So anyway, that season that I got Less Than Perfect, before I got Less Than Perfect, I had tested for Chuck Lorre pilot that ended up not going. And I remember being like, oh, I went in, I nailed it. It was great. It was like a great test, a great audition. I was like, they laughed. It was great. I was like, I'm going to get this. And I didn't get it. And I was so sad. Like I was really devastated. And then it's one of those things where everything happens for a reason. That season I tested for a bunch of things and didn't get them. I tested for Firefly. I've since ended up working with Nathan, who I love. It's so funny how it all sort of, it always comes around. If it's meant to be, if you're meant to know someone, you're meant to know them. Tested for a bunch of things. And then Less Than Perfect was the last thing I tested for and I got it. And it really felt like meant to be. But anyway, after Less Than Perfect finished its run, 4 years later, I got a call that from my agent that Chuck Lorre wanted to see me in his office and could I go in? And I was like, why? That's scary. because at that point, you know, he already had Two and a Half Men on and it was like a huge hit. It was in its like third season, I think. And I went in and he was really lovely and said some very complimentary things, especially about that test that I had done. And then he was like, you know, I always thought about that and always wished you had done that show. And, would you like to be on Two and a Half Men? And I was like, well, yeah. And he told me about this character that he had an idea for. And I was like, I'm in, and it was such a fun experience and it went really well. And he's called me, you know, and then a couple years later, I got a call to come in and be on a few episodes of Big Bang, which was great. And then I did, I think I ended up doing 10 episodes of, it was like 10 or 12 episodes of Mom, which was a really, really great experience getting to work with Allison, who's, you know, a genius and now Be Positive, which it's all sort of come back around where I finally get to be like, you know, at home on a set, with him and this incredible cast. Like I have to say, like Thomas Middleditch, who plays my ex getting a divorce husband, is really He's so good in the show. He's so good. And Annalee Ashford, who's a Tony winner. She's an incredible actress, and she's wonderful too. And Heather Donahue, like, we have such a good cast, and it's been such a great experience. And I'm just, you know, super grateful to Chuck for sort of hanging in with me and, you know, putting me in these parts and getting, I got to play on a bunch of his stuff, and then always sort of thinking of me. It's really, it's so lovely. I can't even tell you. So grateful.
It's really cool. It's like you said, things are just meant to be. They work out the way they're meant to work out.
Yeah.
And what a great bunch of stepping stones to get to the point where now you're together long-term, you and Chuck Lorre. And this show just, it's new. Hopefully a lot of you have checked it out already. If you haven't, we're going to go spoiler free here. But what do you think? And now, you know, you've got a unique perspective because you've not only seen all these shows, but been a part of so many of those shows that have had that Chuck Lorre magic. What is it about the shows that he does that capture the imagination and the hearts of people so much? Because what a success story he's had. And this is just the latest chapter of it.
He's just a genius. And I wish a bunch of people ask me this a lot. Like, what is it about Chuck? Because it's like you want to capture that magic in a bottle, you know, like if you could bottle and sell what he's able to do, there would be a million successful comedies on network television right now, because he is so incredibly good at it. And I wish I could tell you, I don't know what it is. He has this eye. Like, he's like, even when stuff that you think is working or it's getting a laugh, he's like, it's not right. And you're at first, sometimes you can be like, no, it's working, it's great, it's gonna be good. But he's always right, which is, you know, crazy. But he has an eye. Not only is like, it's like he's able to, there's something so steadfast about him. Like, he knows what he wants, and what he wants is always like the best quality product that one can imagine, even if you don't see it originally yourself, because it's just like he's just so tuned in. And also, I will say, there's an energy, like when Chuck comes to set, that is like unlike anything else like I've really experienced. And I've worked with some really amazing showrunners and some really incredible writers, and he just exudes this energy, and he makes you better. He makes you a better actor. I don't know if it's because, you know, he's so well respected that you're like, I want to be my best. And then you work really hard, and then you're just ultimately just like better at what you do because you're trying so much harder. But he has the magic touch, and he's so dedicated, and he's like the hardest working man in show business. Like, he's got so many shows on the air. He's so thoughtful and so delicate and so precise. I don't know. It's really crazy. I have so much respect for him. It's I don't know how he does it.
It's awesome. And you know, I'm so happy that you know, this show is here now for us. I think one common thing with all of his shows is that he has this knack for bringing us characters that we just care about. And no matter how unique or odd the situation may be that, you know, some of these shows have been in, it's, you know, that's what keeps people coming back, not just episode after episode, but season after season. And now you're a part of that magic as well. And obviously somebody that can, you know, carry your weight and embody one of these great Chuck Lorre characters. I think it's like a perfect combination, and I can't wait till that organic, you know, way of creating these shows comes back, where you're able to do this in front of an audience.
Me too.
And I wanted to ask you, and by the way, thank you so much for being on the show. We've been chatting forever, but we can probably chat for 8 more years about everything you've done. But I want to ask you, because you've been on a lot of sound stages before, you've been on a part of so many TV comedies in that classic studio audience mode. what is your favorite moment that comes to mind of yourself performing in front of a studio audience? Not necessarily, you know, a favorite episode or a favorite moment as we saw it at home, but just the way it came off, the way you pulled it off, the magic that happened in front of a live studio audience. What's your favorite moment that you were a part of?
Oh my gosh. That's such a good question. I wish I could come back with it. Well, it was 1997 and the scene was, I wish I had like such a great answer for you. I mean, there's certain moments that do come to mind. A few of them are like, I have to say, with Andy Dick, actually, because Andy was such a wild card that you oftentimes didn't know what he was going to say. And sometimes that was really annoying. And I would say that to his face. I'm not talking trash. Like, he knows that I would say that. I've said that to him many times. But it was also sometimes like crazy, magical. You would capture this moment where you would get this reaction from me or whoever was in the scene with him, where you're like, don't break and ruin the scene, because what he just said was really funny and you want them to be able to use it for the show. But you got to keep going, but you're trying so hard not to laugh, and you're able to just like suck it down and keep going. And there were a few moments with Andy that were like that I really loved. You know, what's interesting and what's coming to mind was also, it's a similar thing. I guess I love sort of like the surprise element of a live audience. I was doing an episode, this is like so long ago, of Ned and Stacy. Do you remember that show?
Absolutely.
Okay. Great show. And I was doing an episode of Ned and Stacy, and Thomas Hayden Church was also like that. He was at that time a big improver, and just you had to roll with it. And I think I was like, I want to say I was like 17, and I had never worked with someone who improv like that before. Like, that was my first experience. And he hadn't done it as much during the week, you know, a lot of times, which is like a performer thing. You kind of save it for the audience and then you throw stuff out there. Mm-hmm. And he did this thing in the scene where he kept going. Like, he just had different alts for different jokes and he just kept rattling through them. And just, to be able to stand there and react and give him a different line or a different reaction every single time as we went was just like one of the most fun moments I can remember on film for me, which is so crazy because honestly, I haven't even thought about this for 25 years. But so thanks for asking that question, because Thomas Hayden Church was like so wonderful and crazy fun to work with. I totally forgot about doing that show and that experience.
Well, look, I'll tell you what, I'm going to put it out there right now. And, you know, we'll be in touch with our people at some point. I think it would be awesome to have you come back on the show someday and just do a listener question and answer, where we just can do rapid fire questions about all the different shows, because I have not even gotten past the surface level. I mean, you were on Blossom. Like, we could do an hour on that.
No, we couldn't. No, we really couldn't.
No. Right. Then we could do an hour on why we couldn't. Because that sounds even more interesting.
I know. Isn't that crazy? I was on Blossom. That's crazy.
It's like... You had me at Blossom and Ned and Stacy. Like, everything else is just icing. It's
hilarious. Oh my God. I totally forgot about Blossom. Yeah. That was totally fun. That was great. I was there for their 100th episode. I remember it was like just a random coincidence. And I was so excited because I got to go to their 100th episode party, which normally like as a guest star, you wouldn't get to go to, but I think just because I was there that week, they're like, ugh, we got to invite this girl. And I remember being like, I'm going to get a dress and I'm going to go and it's going to be so much fun. And it really was. It was so much fun.
Did Joey Lawrence perform?
That's a great question. I don't think he did perform. But I do remember at one point he did say, whoa, in character, but not in the show, like just did it like naturally about something. And my teenage self was like, oh my God, you know.
I'm just a normal 44-year-old dude, and myself is just like, oh my God, just hearing that. That's insane. Well, look, this could be a separate, you know, a movie length conversation, and a book and a mini series on Netflix, just based on all of your stories.
I know we didn't even talk about Series of Unfortunate Events. It's my fave.
What? Oh, you look, and yeah, you throw me for a loop now because, yeah.
I'll just plug it. Everybody can go watch Series of Unfortunate Events. It's on Netflix. It's delightful. Barry Sonnenfeld directed. It's his vision. It's amazing. I'm in all of season two, and it was really, really fun and a total like departure-y type thing for me to do. So that was kind of the last big job that I just did before, you know, Be Positive. And so I want people to watch it.
That's Neil Patrick Harris's.
Yeah, he's so good in it. Oh my God, he's so good. He's otherworldly.
You know, it's funny because I was even just looking at the list of guest stars that you had over the 4 years of Less Than Perfect. And it is a who's who of not just TV, just entertainment in general. I mean, you got Joey McIntyre, you got Joan Rivers, Regis was on there, Paula Abdul was on there, but also, you know, Tori Spelling, Lucy Lawless, Richard Kind. I mean, we could just go on and on because you've been so complimentary about even the limited amount of people that we've spoken about here, about how great they were to work with. I'm sure that all these people would have the same things to say about you. So I think it's really awesome that you have been able to kind of spread your wings over the years and work with every freaking person in Hollywood.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. It's not true, but we did have an incredible group of people that came on Less Than Perfect. What was really fun for me, because I'm a Bachelor fan, was we always had, because it was ABC show, so we always had like The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, which was like always like, that's the week I was the most excited. I was always like, Trista is here and she's doing a scene. I can't even make eye contact. I'm so intimidated. It was great. I loved it.
You've worked with everyone from the Bachelor to the Bachelorette to Joey Lawrence and everyone in between. It's an amazing career. It's an amazing conversation. And look, I mean, we've got so much more to talk about because Be Positive is just getting started. So I'm sure a lot more people will be talking about that show as the weeks go on and it builds up steam. And I'm excited for you.
Thank you. I'm really excited. Yeah, the first two episodes are really establishing Thomas and Annalie's character and their relationship. But I'm personally, just selfishly, I'm super excited about episodes 3, 4, and 5 as we get going, because then they sort of dive into some of the other characters in the show, me being one of them. And I had really fun stuff to do. And I'm just really excited to see where it goes. You know, that's another thing about doing a TV series is like, as an actor, a lot of the time, you're not privy to what's coming up week by week. You get a script, you know, the night before you have a table read. And so I'm always so excited, like script day. I'm like, what's going to happen? What am I going to get to say? You know? So I'm like just as excited as the people watching at home to find out what's going to happen to these characters too.
Awesome. Well, we'll all watch it unfold together. And again, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been it's been awesome.
It's so nice to talk to you. Thank you so much. Get home safe.
Yes. Yeah, no problem. I'm 3 blocks from here, so we're okay.
Okay, good.
All right, folks. What a week it's been. Once again on the Laugh Track, we want to let you know, of course, that the Laugh Track is produced, hosted by myself, Jerry Strauss, but of course the lion's share of the work is done by our friend, the man pulling all the strings, Steve Prentice. And we are all over social media, so we want to make sure that you guys engage with us and follow us. We're on Twitter at Laugh Track TV. We're on Instagram at Laugh Track Pod. We are on Facebook. We've got a group and a page at Laugh Track Pod. I'm so excited. And of course, our website, our one-stop shop where you can get to all of our social media and all of our old episodes as well. Subscribe to all of the platforms where we appear. Go to our website at laughtrackpod.com or just subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcasts, and you'll be able to hear each and every one of our episodes first as soon as it is released. It'll be delivered right to you, so you don't even have to remember. You don't have to worry about it. Do yourself a favor and do us a favor too. We appreciate it when you subscribe to us. Until next time, I am Jerry Strauss. This is The Laugh Track, and we will see you next week.